Second Chance and Other Stories is the debut collection of short stories by Liam Horan, and Liam joins me on the line now. Liam, good morning to you, and you're very welcome indeed to the programme.
Thank you very much, Aidan. Thank you for having me on.
Not at all, and congratulations. I haven't read all of the stories in this collection, Liam, but it would seem to me there are two themes. One, moving on through one's life, I suppose, and secondly, West of Ireland settings.
Yes, I suppose sometimes people kind of assemble stories or have a definite theme. In my case, it kind of, those themes suggested themselves rather than me deliberately setting out to assemble stories like that or to write stories like that. And I suppose it kind of goes without saying that you're very influenced by where you are in terms of your life, the time in your life and the place you're living, etc. So I live in Ballinrobe. That's where my life is, and that's, you know, clearly why West of Ireland settings and West of Ireland people are a big part of the book. It's not the settings are in some ways incidental. You know, they're not a traveller's guide to the West of Ireland either. The settings are just in some ways incidental, but probably do help me to make my characters and my story more real, perhaps, because it's the setting I know best. And moving through life, as you said, yeah, I'm in my mid-50s, and, you know, while it's still young and all of that, it's not as young as 17 or 30 or 40. And also, you know, you're at that period in your life where people very close to you are slipping away. You know, I lost both my parents in the last year and 3 or 4 months. Sorry, last year and 6 months. And, you know, that they were a huge influence on my life, and their passing had a huge impact on my life and the life of my siblings and all that, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think that's probably, it gives you a pause then to think about, well, you know, you're moving up, you know, as cousins often say, we'll get to the top of the queue now, you know. So, you know, that does make you think about, well, what matters, or what, you know, how we handle grief, how we realize that, you know, you just got to keep getting on, kind of thing, and keep going, you know.
Yeah, there's I suppose context is important, of course, but there's also a certain nostalgia for the past, and of course the past is gone and there's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the things that my book hopefully does capture is we can't bring the past back, and nor should we wallow in the past either. So in my case, there are a lot of, for example, but not, I hope, in a way that it has the finality for everybody involved. Obviously there's a finality for the person involved, but you've got to get on, and you know, we kind of reshaped your life in some ways, because people that were, you know, they're empty chairs, empty tables now, but you're still there. You owe to yourself and the people around you to keep getting on and keep going. And it's something that I would find, there's a lot of death in the book. I'm not morbid by nature, you know. I'm not somebody who's obsessed by death or obsessed by loss. It is very significant in my life in the last year and a half, and it will probably always be with me. But also, there's a counter pull to be, whatever the word is, I'm going to use the word resilient, though I think it's the word that has become corrupted in some ways. But, you know, just the ability to get on and to you know, to deal with it and get up the next day, kind of thing, you know. And that's actually something that I would have got from my parents, for example. My father was a great believer in, you know, the therapy of doing things, the therapy of work. He often said work is a great therapy, the therapy of just getting on and doing things and not wallowing too much in what is, you know, what has gone wrong or who you've lost or whatever, you know. So I think some of my characters hopefully reflect that there's still a lot to live, you know, with my dog who doesn't agree, everything.
Clearly a different viewpoint there, no question about that.
The problem with my dog is when he gets into this mode, it tends to take a lot to relieve him from it. So let me try and...
Well, I'm a lover of dogs, Liam, so I don't take any exception to it at all. The point, though, being...
I'm a slave of a dog, but it's quite a different thing, yeah? I'm a slave to my dog.
Well, I'm a slave to my dog as well, a Springer Spaniel, and I'm never done with him. But the various... stories. For example, the Spanish man returning to the Irish city where he met the love of his life, or the journalist retracing old steps after the death of a long-lost friend, or an interesting one, the sports star redefining her relationship with her sport and indeed herself. I mean, in terms of these characters, how were you able to identify them and then, you know, put them down on paper?
I think characters are an amalgamation of various people. So that Spanish man you mentioned coming back to Ireland, physically I have a man in mind, a Spanish man I know actually, but the story is not his story, you know what I mean? So you kind of amalgamate characters and you're creating ultimately, you know, you're creating scenarios. I've always enjoyed creating characters. I've always enjoyed the thing of observing how people do, how they, you know, to a room, how they swim in the pool. I've always enjoyed just observing people and writing about that. I suppose the big thing for me in a story is what is the underlying premise of the story? I mean, you know, what is the story trying to prove or achieve? Maybe I don't like the word prove, maybe more like to achieve, which, you know, in terms of, is it trying to make the point that sometimes in life things are bad, but they could be worse? That might be a premise I would write down starting a story. So I would then go and try and write a story that would make that point, and then I'd find my character. And then when you find the character, you can do great things with characters. I mean, I've changed genders and characters without any surgery or any procedures needed. You know, some of my characters started out as male, became female. Some of my characters started out as teachers or whatever and became journalists. So you can do great things with characters, but what I would say is that if you don't have an underlying premise, your characters can lack, the story can lack something, can lack a purpose, can lack an overall thing that strings it along. And the other thing that I find as well, my stories don't tend to have epic moments. They're not we all lived happily or unhappily ever after type thing. They're much more reflection. And I think that for me, the story is always not necessarily about the story, but how that character or the characters in the story related to that event. So, you know, you can go to number one in the charts in one of my stories as a singer, but actually I'm more interested in how you felt about that than the fact you went number one. But the events are kind of incidental as well. If you're, you know, they're not kind of like filler page turners. They're much more about observing how is this person dealing with this? How do they feel about it? How they're reacting to how others feel about it? And that's to me where you really start getting into characters then, and you know, and you bring a lot of yourself to your characters as well. You know, there are plenty of the foibles and flaws and characteristics of characters that and strengths of characters that I've created are part of me as well. You know,
and in terms of then of actually sitting down to write it, I mean, was this collection of short stories in your head for some time? You are, of course, a former journalist. You were wrote on Gaelic Games for the Independent many years ago, I think between 1995 mm-hmm. and 2000. So you are a writer, but in the intervening period you've done other things. In terms of this collection of short stories, how do you go about it? How do you go about writing down?
In my case, and it's different for everybody. In my case, I was writing some stories, and I had about six or seven written, and I was actually involved in editing Andy Moran's book, which came out last year. And I did David Brennan and the Brennan family in Castle Bookstore for many years, and just and David published that book under Mayo Books Press. And in that, I said to David, you know, I'm writing a few short stories. So he said, send me on a couple. And I did, and he offered to publish it, which was a huge boost, you know, because lots of people are writing away, they're trying to get their stuff published, be it in a paper or to win a competition, or self-publishing, which is an arduous enough undertaking. So that gave me, you know, for the last few years, I've been writing stories kind of on an ongoing basis, and that gave me the impetus then to shine up 15 or 16 or 17 of them. And I eventually shined up 15 of them. I had one more that nearly got there, but I wasn't fully happy with it, so I didn't include it. So it was a bit of both. I was writing stories, and then I had the concentrating presence of a deadline, which you from the world of media knows is the only thing ultimately the journalists respond to is a deadline. You know, so that having that deadline would have helped me to kind of finalize them. Because if you don't publish them publishing them finishes them. If you don't publish them, they're not, they're kind of never finished. You never declare them finished, I would say. So at least now that they're published, we'll write more stories now, you know. So that's probably good.
Yeah, just a text has come in here. How far back are you going in terms of the characters? Are there some characters in this collection from earlier in your life? I know that you were mentioning that you're in your mid-50s now, but are any of the characters maybe looking back over when you were a younger man?
Yeah, there are stories that kind of hark back to that point, going back to childhood. You identify the timing of a story can be identified by the technology you mention. So if you mention WhatsApp in a story, it's clearly more modern than if you mention, buying the local paper, people queuing outside the shop to buy the local paper for football match reports on a Tuesday morning, as would have been the case once upon a time, you know. So, my characters, some of them are older now and are looking back to younger ones. So that Spanish man, for example, he's harking back to a time in the mid-80s when he came to Ireland to work as a teacher in an exchange program, when he met the love of his life, basically. And I like going back into that time, because I think the years between about 18 and 30 are huge years in our lives, you know, where we leave home, we go to college, or we get a job, or do both. Some people end up getting married in that period of time. But, you know, you have a lot of your great experiences between 18 and 30, and that would, for me, that's the mid-1980s, you know, from that 10 or 12-year period on then. So I like writing about that period, because that's the time I best remember music from, the time I best remember other things from popular culture, you know. So I like to go back there. But, you know, equally, probably all of my characters are, another one about a journalist who moved to London and a story that unfolded there. So the story is flashing back between then and now he's burying his best friend from that time, and it flashes back to that time as well. I'd say about 1988, 89, I think I said that, the flashbacks in. So, yeah, they do. But characters, people influence you, people from all parts, all stages of your life feed themselves into your characters as well, you know?
And when you talk about these characters, a couple of poignant stories, really. The father, for whom the breakup of his daughter's marriage sunders his friendship with his son-in-law, and the widower venturing out into the world again. I mean, people would be able to identify with these characters quite easily, I think.
Yeah, that one is called Splintering, the one about the father who, when his daughter and her husband break up, he loses his best friend, which was his son-in-law, you know, and that's actually, I think that's almost something unspoken a lot of the time, and his difficulty is, the son-in-law kind of got him out of himself again, got him going to a few matches, got him involved in carving bog oak, and now he's about to have an exhibition of his bog oak work, and the one person he'd really like to have there is his son-in-law, but he can't invite him, and he can't really, or shouldn't really, cross the line, because when the couple break up, everybody else has to stand back, you know, and sort of accept that now we've lost somebody in our lives, basically. And we can't, certainly in the early stages, you know, he can't or shouldn't cross the line, would be the thing, you know. So that story is about, well, does he cross the line? Does he reach out to the son-in-law and say something about the exhibition, etc., you know? That's actually my favorite story in the book. The widower, he's working in a charity shop, and a couple of things happen. Nothing dramatic, but a couple of things happen that prompt him further down the road. He's a man who has travelled previously. He's a man who's been out and about, but has gone into his shell. And a couple of things happen that are clearly about to stimulate him to go back out there again. When I say go back out there again, I don't mean on the dating scene, so to speak, but just to get out and about again, and, you know, to kind of take off travelling again. And he clearly misses his wife very much. So, there are, and, you know, I hope people would see in them events that they might understand, they might have experienced, they might know people who, one where when the relationship breaks up, the number of people who lose friends and lose touch, is quite significant. And, I think it's an interesting thing. And, you know, in time heals all these things eventually. board and all sorts of lines crisscross again later on. But in the early stages, it's very, very difficult. And that's very difficult for parents as well, to see all those people that you spent great days with now drifting away from your life, you know.
Absolutely. Well, look, at congratulations, Liam. As I said, I haven't read all of the stories, but I have read some of them, and wonderful stories. And as I was saying a moment ago, characters that are easily identifiable, readily identifiable. It's Second Chance and Other Stories by Liam Horan, published by Mayo Books Press, and as they say, available in all good bookshops. Liam, before I let you go, while we're talking about your debut collection of short stories, several texts, please ask Liam what he thinks of the new Mayo management setup. Obviously, Kevin McStay.
There's an inherent flaw in the question because I'm part of the management setup.
Don't incriminate yourself. Plead the fifth.
It's the most wonderful management setup I've ever seen.
I have no doubt. Well, thank you very much for that very, very brief but honest analysis.
Kevin has done a very good job so far. I will say that. He's organised things very well. He's got great people around him. He's very thorough, very systematic, very much we do today what we have to do. And I think, you know, obviously no ball has been kicked in anger and in peace yet, but that, to me, they're all the building blocks, and I think he's doing very well.
Very good, Liam. Well, the best of luck to the Mayo team for next season, of course, and the very best of luck to you with this publication,
Thank
Second
you.
Chance and Other Stories. Liam Horan, many thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. 28 minutes past 9 o'clock is the time. I'm kind of getting confused because I'm never on the radio at this hour of the morning, so I'm kind of... It's possible that I might say the afternoon, but you know where I am.